Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Cindy Baldwin.
And you're listening to the midweek version of Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for needlework artists. And let's see, tonight, there is no Stitch Hour tonight. This is the week where we have the podcast, then we will have a Stitch Hour next Wednesday. And that will be a Stitch and Chat type thing because I don't have a guest. But that's okay. We have fun on the Stitch and Chats. And I'll have undoubtedly have some giveaway stuff. Probably some Avalia kits or something. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, she just introduced. Just introduced another new thing from Krista West. Yeah, that's like every other week we have a new. But she has a new one. Somebody's garden that she just put up the other day. So check that out.
Clara's garden.
Clara's.
For her newest granddaughter. I just read this today.
Oh, look at you bought it today.
No, I was just reading her email.
Oh, today. I didn't read the email. I just saw the pictures. Oh, so that's the granddaughter. Oh, that's excellent. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So check that out. Buy one for the granddaughter. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. So that'll be next Wednesday, 8 o'clock Eastern time on the YouTube channel. And working on, I don't know if it'll make any difference or matter to anyone, but also working on maybe being able to send the Stitch Hours to YouTube and to Facebook simultaneously. So if I can get the signups worked out, we'll be able to do that. Don't know if that makes any difference to anybody, but whatever.
Well, it's another group of people, maybe.
Yep. I have a great time doing those. I think we all have a great time doing those. We got kind of a regular crowd, and it's fun to do. So
yeah.
And Sunday, Yvette Stanton will be our guest. So yay for that!
Yeah, she's got a new book out or coming out soon, doesn't she?
Yeah, coming out, but it won't be till next year.
Oh, okay.
Hardanger Filling Stitches. She's working on it, and she hopes to have it available in Australia and New Zealand by the end of the year, and then U.S. will be able to get it into next year. But, yeah, we haven't recorded the show yet, but we'll talk about that. But, Filling Stitches for Hardanger. There's that could be fun. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, and we'll talk about, obviously a million other things with Yvette, so that'll be fun. Yeah. Yep, so that's Sunday. That'll be her third time with us. Yeah, some of these people we've had multiple times, you look back, when was the last time? Geez, that was almost 3 years ago now we talked to her, so we got to do that more often.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they're always coming up with new stuff.
Right, right.
There's always stuff to talk about.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. 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 And that reminds me, it's been a while since we talked to Krista West at Avalia. So we should, because she's always got something going on. She's writing a book,
she's
too.
Book.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was in her email, too. I think she's done ish with it.
Oh.
The photography and everything.
That's an undertaking, those books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So, yeah, I'll be interested to see what she does with that, since she shares everything she does thoroughly. It'll be interesting to see what she does in a book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep. So there we go. All kinds of things. We got to go to the celebration of life stitching you had for your mother. Really glad we could go to that. But I tell you, I enjoyed myself. It was a great group of people, great conversation. But what a tremendous way to remember, your mother, number one, but to remember a lifelong needleworker like that. I just thought that was a great idea. You got a good facility. We were able to stitch, lots of daylight. I just really enjoyed that afternoon. That was a good way to remember your mother.
Thank you. And I'm so glad you and Margo were able to come up. And I hope Margo wasn't too bored.
No, she had a good book. She was fine.
Yeah, good.
Yeah. No, that was, that was special. So, you know, sorry about your mother, but, you know, it's a good memory.
Yeah. And I gave away a lot of her needlework to people. Now I'll have to. This will make me cry if I talk about it. So, yeah.
Well, we don't have to talk about it. It's okay. We don't have to talk about it. I just thought it was a great way to celebrate a great life. And, you know, so applause to you for putting that together and having the idea. It just really was a nice touch. So, yeah, good for that. And then we were talking before the show, you know, this whole when people pass away, needleworkers pass away, what do you do with the stash thing? And then in cases like your mother where you have truckloads of finished pieces, you know, what do you do with them? Because you don't want to just throw them in the trash. You can't just do that. You know, that's.
Or, you know, what a lot of people will do is just give it to Goodwill or, you know, Salvation Army or something like that, and then people will take them and, oh, cool frame, you know, and right. Ditch the needlework.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And that hurts just as much. Yeah. So, yeah, so we were tossing around some ideas for what, like, well, you know, the stash is one thing. You can find a local guild or somebody and people will take the threads and the ground cloth and the charts, you know, you can usually get rid of that, though I'm sure there are some guilds who just cringe because they already have somebody's garage full of stuff. But, you know, but because I remember back in Illinois, the A&G chapter I was a member of, that there was one instance there where, look, can somebody help me out? My garage is full of this stuff. You know, it needs to move somewhere. And but finished pieces. You know, there's a couple ideas that came to my mind were people who stage houses for sale or interior designers who are looking for unique work would be a couple of places. I got to believe that that they would take, you know, especially stuff like your mother's, just beautiful stuff, all framed, that it would be a good use for that. And then it would get used.
I'll explore that a little bit and let you know what I find out.
Yeah, I'd be curious. Yeah, somebody that can use the art and and have it, and you know, I don't know. I know Marga took the one piece that we took from your mother's collection that's hanging in our living room. You know, she brought it home right there. Right next to one of my pieces hanging in the living room, and it's beautiful. And
nice.
Glad to have
that's
it.
Great.
So, but
that would make her happy.
Yeah, well, it looks great. It looks great. But, you know, just different, you kind of think outside the box, you know, places that people, you know, stores, restaurants, you know, that might be looking for a decoration or, you know, some artwork that could go up, because restaurants are, especially smaller coffee shops and stuff, are always putting up unique things, and like they'll have a theme, and you know, I gotta believe, yeah, some place that, yeah, where somebody doesn't rip it out and say, oh good, I got a frame for a buck. No
right
the frame
when the frame costs $250.
Right exactly. Yeah, so
I've also thought about charitable organizations that have silent auctions.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I'm looking into that.
Yeah. No, there's got to be places. People who have fundraisers. I mean, there's community groups having fundraisers all the time. Here, try and, you know, make a few bucks off of these.
Right.
So.
And
yeah,
have
got
a unique piece of needlework.
Right. And their art. I mean, you know, talking about your mother's stuff, it's all beautiful stuff, beautifully done. Every one of them, framed, the whole bit. So it needs to live on somewhere. And,
right. Yeah. And you suggested she had a quilt that she had stitched and I had finished for her before she passed away. She'd done everything, but do the quilting. She even had the quilt sandwich put together. And, you know, she brought that with her from Denver when she moved here. And she kept saying, I really need to get that finished. I have to find somebody that can finish that. And we never got around to it. So when we were cleaning things out while she was in hospice, of course, we found it. So I took it to a quilt shop over in the Amana Colonies. And they have a couple of people that do quilting for their customers. And so the person took it and popped it on her long arm machine and did a beautiful job quilting it. She talked to me before she did it and asked me, you know, what kind of a pattern I wanted. And I said, I don't know, you know, pick something. So she picked a quilting pattern that she felt was appropriate to the construction of the quilt, which is, it's a sampler quilt. So half of the squares are pieced and half of them are appliqued.
Ah.
So she chose a quilt pattern that, you know, kind of worked with the quilt blocks. And she did a really beautiful job.
Mm-hmm.
And Mom got to see it before she passed.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, like about a week before I got it. The person that did the quilting did it really, really fast for her.
Oh, that's great. So she knew it got finished then.
Yeah, so she knew it got finished. But you suggested that a good place for that would be to donate to a church.
Yeah.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah. Yeah, people, I think, don't think about churches for that stuff. I mean, they don't want you to just dump a rummage sale worth of stuff. But things like that, there are always needy families. You know, their house burns down or... you know, somebody died suddenly and they're really in the lurch and any number of things. Somebody just moved into the community. You just never know. And, you know, they need a couple of good blankets. Well, here's some quilts we have and here's a couple of quilts. And, you know, churches will fix those things up or put together those things together and help families out. I mean, I've seen it dozens of times.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. Because, I mean, there's always somebody in a community, I don't care what community it is, that is in need. And it's a good way to help them out discreetly and, you know, not any embarrassment or anything, and just help them out. And churches are really good for that. And, mm-hmm. I know, I'm sure most churches do it, but I know that... two churches I was involved in, they always had just a slush fund of cash that sat in a drawer somewhere or in a safe. I don't know where it was, never did know where it was. But, you know, because people just would show up and you could tell they were desperate and you know, not somebody who was looking for something to buy a fifth of booze, you know, but people were just desperate to feed their kids or something. And, you know, all right, we have some money and we have some connections and some people will help you out. And And that happens, you know, between, Monday to Saturday is when those kinds of things happen. So most people never see them, never hear about it, but, you know, it's there. And
that's a great suggestion. I'll reach out to her pastor.
Yeah. No, it's worth checking out. Yep, I'd be surprised if there's any church in any community that doesn't have some form of a thing that, you know, the church secretary will know about and the pastor and, you know, and that's, you know, help people out. So, yeah. Yep. Well, bravo. That was, you know, and of course, you and I both lost parents here in the last few months. And, most difficult, but yeah, it was just so cool for that. And my dad was cremated and there was no service for it. So my sister and her family and Marga and our son Kevin, by FaceTime had a little ceremony at, where he was buried.
Oh,
the ashes where they were, ashes were buried. There's a stone and everything. And my dad was a lifelong model train enthusiast. Like I mean, he always had a layout in the basement. I never knew a home that he lived in that didn't have one. And as we were wrapping up the thing, there's a it was in Davison, Michigan, is where he was born and where he died. There's a train freight trains go through town, you know, on a regular basis through Davison. And just as we were wrapping up, a train went through town and blew the whistle. And oh. It was, you know, we all just kind of stopped. Yep, there you go. Yep.
Yeah.
For Dad. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So, yep, we all get to do that sooner or later. Yeah. So, oh, and speaking of passing away, just the other day, Lois Caron of the Caron Collection passed away.
I saw that.
Yeah. Yeah, that was sad. Boy, you know, when you look at thread lines, I mean, obviously, Krynek is one, you know, thread lines that have had a major impact on needlework. Mm-hmm. Krynek is one, but I think 1A would be the Caron Collection.
100% agree.
Yeah. Well, look what it's done. You know, if you take the Caron Collection overdyed, look what that has done for the counted canvas world. Just that. Mm-hmm. How many counted canvas designs are based off of any one of those overdyed, multicolored threads? Oh man. Yeah.
I'm gonna guess she was the first one that really did that in a big way. There may have been other people that were doing overdyed threads, but.
Probably right. You're probably right. Yeah.
Probably has to be the first one that really made a big success out of it.
Yeah. And, you know, and quality threads, quality dye jobs. I mean, yep. You know, stuff that you just love to buy. I mean, really.
Mm-hmm. I know. I have a lot of it.
Yeah. So do I. Yeah. So I hope there's there's an exit strategy that allows that to continue. I would assume so.
I would assume so too. She was in her early 80s, I think I read.
Yeah.
So I would assume that she probably maybe wasn't real active in the business anymore.
Yeah. I sure hope so. You know, so many people in the needlework world, their kids just don't want anything to do with the business, and it dies out. And I hope there was a plan there, because that would be a huge loss if those threads went away.
So, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yep. So that was sad. And, you know, yeah, those threads. Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you go to a wall of those threads and you can spend a lot of time just, yeah, mm-hmm. staring at them. Yep. So, yeah, sorry to hear about that. But, yeah. Again, we all get our turn, so, yeah.
So, after you left Iowa City, you were going to go back over to the Quad Cities and have go to a lecture with Kathy Andrews the next day and a class after that? How'd that go?
It was fantastic. Yeah, if Kathy Andrews, Unbroken Thread, if you want a good lecture, good lecturer with good topics, Kathy is your person. Boy, call on her. She did a whale of a job of samplers and some sampler history from her collection, and she just did a tremendous lecture. It was really good. And on top of it, this is so cool. She has figured out a way with someone to take her original samplers, most of them, some are still in frames, but a good number of her originals, and sandwich them in plexiglass, heavy plexiglass, so you can see both sides. And so she had those laid out on a table, and you can't hurt them because they're all enclosed and encased, but they're flats, and so you can see both sides. So you can just pick them up and study them. She had magnifying glasses out, so you could... It was the coolest thing that I've experienced when it comes to samplers. And you could just, you know, study them all you want, and both sides. And to me, I love to look at the backside. I think you learn so much from the backside of needlework. And, it was so cool to look at those things. And she had a bunch of them. So, yeah. That was cool.
That's really neat.
Yeah. I'd never seen that because usually they're in frames or you just have pictures because they're afraid to, you know, the owner is afraid that they'll be damaged. But you can't damage these. And yet you can look at the originals. And, oh, man, it was so fun. So
that's really neat.
Yeah. They're heavy. Who are they heavy? Yeah.
Oh, I imagine.
Yeah. But, so if you have her do a lecture on samplers and she can bring her collection, you want to have some tables. She'll ask you to lay out some tables because she lays them all out. Yeah, we had a whole session after the lecture where we were just hanging around looking at her, you know, these are the originals, not reproductions. These are the originals, and able to see that. It was really neat. Yeah. Yep.
That's cool.
Yep, that was fun. And she got Beth and me over the slate frame hump.
Uh-huh. And it wasn't really that big of a hump, was it?
No.
Yeah.
It never is. It never is.
No, I know.
You know, just if somebody knows what they're doing to show you what to do, and it was like, oh, what's the big deal here, you know? Mm-hmm. And so she got it. So I went home. I think Beth was a little jealous. I went home with mine all laced up. Hers was partially laced up, but she didn't have too much more to do, I don't think. But that was fantastic because we were stitching the top and bottom. She showed us how to do that to the web, mm-hmm. the canvas web stuff. And so that night I went and stitched the top or the bottom to finish the job. And then the next day, then she showed us how to lace it up. Mm-hmm. And so what I got, her design, the King's Pineapple, that I had gotten when she did, I think it was at EGA a couple of years ago when Beth and I went. I've always wanted to do that. It's a crewel embroidery, but I wanted to do it on a slate frame so I could get the full experience. Mm-hmm. And so now that's on a slate frame, and oh, is that wonderful. Oh, so that the ground is just so tight. And, oh, it's just such a treat to stitch on. Oh, man, I've been kind of working at it here.
Cool.
Yeah. Gonna get another slate frame, I think, for another project. Well, it's a goldwork project I got from Natalie Dupuis that I've been wanting to do, but I knew that had to be on a slate frame. And, Oh, so nice. That cloth does not move at all. That's great. Yep. So huge thanks to Kathy for that. Yep. And then, the workshop on Saturday was she had a sampler that she'd reproduced. And so, she was showing us on that and, you know, that was mainly cross stitch, but there's a couple other stitches in it. But, that was a fun time.
Good.
Without a doubt, to be able to look at those samplers originals in plexiglass with a magnifier. Oh, that was just, you don't get to do that every day.
Mm-mm. Oh, no.
No.
Not at all. I mean, normally, like you say, they don't want you to handle them.
Right.
Or they're framed.
Right. Yeah. So, yep, that was a highlight. Yeah.
And so were there generally big differences in color between the front and the back?
Not with most of hers. I asked her about that. And having good threads that are still showing good color on the front is one of the priorities when she buys one.
Oh,
so, okay. I mean, there's clearly a difference. There's no doubt there was a difference. But not like so many of them you see where basically the color's gone from the front. And you flip it over and it's like this rainbow of color. That's kind of a priority for her. So, but still a difference. And then there are always those threads that deteriorate because of what they used to dye them.
Right.
And then on the back, then you get to see what the real color is. So, Yeah, you just learn. You learn. I love looking at the backs, and I know people don't look at the back of my needlework. Well, okay, fine, I won't. But I enjoy looking because, you know, like skilled stitchers, you see how they handle the thread from stitch to stitch. I think you learn as much about how they stitch the whatever stitch it is from the back as the front, and pick up some tips there. I love studying the back of them, and you know, I don't not to embarrass anyone or say, oh boy, you know, no, but there's education to be had there, and then with these samplers, you know, the little girls, sometimes it's just fun because you could tell they, you know, whatever, just get done so my mom gets off my back so I can go, you know. And so that's funny. You know, some thread carried 6 inches across, just this, who cares? So that's fun. But then if there are stitches that you don't run into very often, you can see how they were done. And
right.
Yeah.
And you really do need to see the front and the back to know better, maybe not for sure, but better how an unusual stitch was done.
Yeah. No, I'm always been a fan of that, and you know, people are welcome to look at the backs of my things anytime they want, because maybe they, you know, have an idea for how I might do it better. I'm all open. I'm all about it. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, and to be able to do that, and you know, I mean, she had had magnifying glass. You could just lay it right down and just look. You know how cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool. So.
Fantastic.
Yep. Yeah, anybody's looking for a lecture, get Kathy, the Unbroken Thread.
I wasn't able to go.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm sorry you couldn't go too, because you would have really enjoyed the lecture on Friday night. You really would have. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, you know, she's in Iowa, so I'll get to see. I don't know if she's done that. She's a member of the Cedar Rapids chapter of the EGA, and I think she's done something for them, but I don't know if she's ever done this, talked about her samplers.
Yeah, yeah.
That chapter.
But. Well, you'll now know the next time you get a chance. Jump on it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Definitely.
Yep. So yeah, so that was really cool. That was a fun weekend. We really had a great time, and
yeah.
It was special all the way around. So, yep.
And Margo wasn't too bored?
No. She, for the workshop on Saturday, we left like at 2:00. And some people were still there, but no, Margo, she had a good book, so she was fine. Okay. I just sat there in the back and read her book, and then the,
what, about a 6-hour drive for you?
5, yeah. Yeah, so got the car and drove home, yeah. But no, it was good, yeah. And the, we did the sampler, and then we got involved in the slate frame thing, and talking about, you know, the quality of slate frames and trestles, and yeah, so...
So did she have any recommendations for anybody in the U.S. that makes good ones?
She had somebody, and I forget who it was, but then Beth wrote to Mary Corbett, and Mary Corbett suggested Ecclesiastical Threads.
Oh, okay.
And that those are quality, because the ones that we own are from Access Commodities, and they're fine. Mm-hmm. But Kathy was, when she was lacing them up, was wishing that the sides that have the holes in them, that those were thicker, because the ones she uses, they have a thicker wood. Mm-hmm. And she was concerned that they might bend a little bit, give a little bit under the tension. But mine that she laced up, I've been monitoring it, and it's been fine, so... You know, the Access Commodities ones, at least so far, will function just fine. Yeah, so it's not like don't buy those, because you can get those from any needlework store. I know, Kim. Well,
the idea of the lacing is that you can always tighten it up if it needs to be tightened anyway.
Right. Right. So, yeah, so that was, but then, of course, you look at, you know, something as long term, so then you start to look at what are better quality ones. And so, like, Jenny Aiden Christie has beautiful slate frames. The shipping is kind of the problem there, right, from England.
Yeah, so let's talk about tools.
Yes.
Talking about tools. So I was listening to the Dressed podcast a few weeks ago, and it's done by a couple of fashion historians. And they had a series of two where they talked with a couple of Navajo weavers, very, very highly skilled Navajo weavers. And it was, but they were really interesting. But towards the end of the second podcast, they had a conversation about tools. And the way that it started was that one of the women had won an award for her weaving. And one of her friends said to the woman's husband, "Aren't you proud of what she's done?" And he kind of said, "Oh, yeah." Which, you know, was sort of a not exactly the reaction that was expected.
Right, right.
And he went on to say that she couldn't have done that weaving without her tools. And I make her tools.
Oh.
And, of course, with the Navajo weavings, there's a whole lot of history and cultural practices and even kind of religious practices that are associated with weaving. It's not just throw some threads on a loom and, you know, run the shuttle back and forth. There's,
right,
there's a whole lot of other stuff involved in it. And the same is true of the tools. So, you know, there's things about, you don't use a tree that's been downed by lightning for a tool. You don't cut a tree down to make a tool. You only use special trees for the tools. And you know, when he was talking about tools, he was talking about the loom itself and the shuttle and, you know, whatever else is involved in the weavings. So that made me think about the tools that we use and the fact that, you know, oh, we pick up the scissors or the slate frame or the, you know, stretcher bars or whatever, and it's kind of it's infrastructure to us, and we don't really think too much about it. But it just made me think that every once in a while, we really ought to think about the people that make these things and at least, you know, think about appreciating them a little bit, especially
yeah,
something that's really well made.
Yeah. Huh. So you can't use a tree that's been downed by lightning. That's interesting.
Uh-huh.
See, when you say those things, I want to know why. What's the cultural reason for that? And because you know that there's very specific reasons.
Yeah, and they didn't go. I mean, it's been probably 3 or 4 weeks since I listened to those, so I don't remember all the details. But I don't think she said specifically why. She was just kind of listing some of the things that are prohibited by their culture, by their
right,
beliefs.
Right.
Not the reasons behind them. And you know, that may be something that they just simply don't share.
Yeah.
Outside of their families.
Right. Right.
And their belief system.
Yeah. Now, see, to me, that, you know, that kind of stuff just adds so much meaning. But even that aside, oh, you're right. You know, I'm sitting here, I've got 4 Oort bowls that I bought. Like, I need 4 Oort bowls. But, you know, for crying out loud, that's just stupid. But it's Mike's turn. Now, he doesn't make them anymore. He had an Etsy shop. But it's just the beautiful wood, the craftsmanship. And I just love having that kind of stuff sitting here on the table, because it's just, you know, it's humans that have talent and make beautiful things. Yeah.
Yeah. But everybody needs some kind of tool for their product that they're making, you know, for the wood turners, you know, they need their tool, their lathes and their chisels. I don't know, is that what they call them?
Yep. Chisels. Yep.
You know, so everybody that makes something beautiful owes that to the people that made the tools that they use to make the beautiful objects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And when it comes to weaving, holy smokes, any weaver you talk to, you talk about tools, and many of them just gorgeous wooden structures. Yeah. And I'm a sucker for well-made wooden items. Mm-hmm. I'll buy that stuff all day long just because, you know, I just think it's so beautiful, and it needs to be preserved and appreciated. And who is it? The lady who does the passementry that we just talked to the other day, Elizabeth Ashdown.
Yeah.
If you look at some pictures of her in her workspace, oh my word.
Oh, really complicated.
Right. Cool. Right. Yep. Yep. And you got to have them all. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Well, and
more than one.
Of course. Yeah. But even Jennifer with the weaving she does and spinning, you know, she's got a nice collection of beautiful wood tools.
Yes.
That all of them necessary for whatever, you know, for whatever she does. And love that stuff. Mm-hmm. And I love the history of it. You know, I just that there used to be a show on TV, a guy who made things all with hand tools.
I think I remember seeing that on public TV.
Yeah, it was on PBS. And just fascinating to me because chisels and gouges, or I don't know what all the tools were, hand saws, but he make this beautiful wood pieces with hand tools. And you think, oh, I got to have a table saw and a router. No, you don't.
No, you don't.
You just need skill. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And years of practice.
And time.
Yeah.
Because it takes longer to do that kind of thing by hand.
Right. Right. Yeah. But we, we forget Americans, you know.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's part of it, and that's what I love about so much of the history, especially Europe. Yeah, the way that they make these, you know, things that have been around forever, and Elizabeth Ashdown had a thing where she was spinning GIMP on her Instagram page here just the other day. And she had some belt around her with spools, and then there was the main thread was strung across the room, and then she was just walking around and making GIMP, and all by hand. Wow. You know, that's, yeah. Not some machine just cranking it out by the yard, but, Yeah. So this guy, so husband and wife, he made the tools, and she did the weaving then.
But she gets all the credit for her beautiful weaving.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah.
But that's what people see, you know, in a show. They see the weaving, and they don't know how they're made for the most part, you know, unless they are weavers themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in a quilt show or, you know, a needlework show or any kind of an art show, you know, you're looking at the final product. You're not really thinking about the process
of
making that product.
Right. How long did it take you to do that? Oh, geez, really?
I know. Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Like that's the important thing.
Yeah. No, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Yeah. Now, that Dressed podcast, I got to start listening to that, because then you had another one about the specialness spiral from that. I got to listen to this thing.
Yeah. Oh, I've been listening to it for several years, and it's really interesting. And you know, most of the time they're talking about some minor or the other, and, you know, it's interesting. But they've had several just in the last, I don't know, couple of months that I thought were really pertinent to our interests. And that specialness spiral, I don't think that was actually, that wasn't the Dress podcast. That was another podcast.
Oh.
I think it might have been Hidden Brain, but I'm not positive.
Oh, you're right. No, that, yep, I'm wrong. Yep, that was Hidden Brain. I remember in your email. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so that had to do with buying something, clothing or whatever, and then saving it for the perfect time to wear it. And I thought, oh man, how many threads or fabrics have I bought that I'm saving for something special? And how am I going to know that it's time to use it? What, you know, how am I defining special?
Yeah. When I went through the information you sent on that, oh boy. Yeah. Several skeins of thread came to mind. And then I was looking for something in my drawer full of linen, and oh yeah, that I'm saving that for something special. What?
Yeah.
Yeah. What?
Yeah. So you're denying yourself the pleasure of working on something or working with something that is special because you haven't found just exactly the right thing for it. And maybe the right thing is out there, but you're the one that is going to decide what the right thing is. Yeah. You know, silk threads. I've got all kinds of silk thread, and I'm just, you know, working on some little perforated paper things and using threads out of my stash, but I wouldn't even think about using a silk thread on perforated paper. And, well, why not?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, it would be beautiful. And, you know, if it's the colors that I want, if it works well with the colors I'm using, why not use it?
Yeah. Yeah. No, one of the first things I ran across is a full yard of 40 count linen that I bought with no purpose. Just bought it,
uh-huh.
You know, for that, some special thing. It's like, you know, what's the deal? Cut it up and use it. Well, yeah, but it's a yard.
Yeah, how many pieces of 40 count linen have you bought since you bought that yard?
We're not answering that question. No. We're not. But, yep, there it is.
So they're different colors, right?
Yeah, yeah. I can rationalize and justify all day long, but, yeah. But, yeah, there's that yard, you know, uncut. You know, what for what? Use it, you know? Got a million charts. Chart one up and use it. You know, let's go.
Yep.
Yeah. But it was interesting in the article that came with that where they talked about, you know, buying a shirt or a dress or whatever, and then you don't use it right away, and then it starts, its status as a special item starts to grow, mm-hmm. to the point where it's almost a barrier to use. Mm-hmm. And one of the things they mentioned was candles. How many candles are in houses right now that are waiting for that special occasion to burn them? You know, right?
Oh, I can't tell you how many candles Mom had and how many candles I'm finding now that I'm cleaning my house out that, you know, never been burned.
Right. You know, but that's a classic one. You pick those things. Oh, it smells so good. Oh, for a special thing, we'll have that. Just light it. Just
right.
Light it and enjoy it. Yeah.
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 Yeah, definitely.
No.
There's probably any number of things that anybody could think about that they buy, you know, whether it's, like you say, candles or a dish or, mm-hmm. you know, anything that
yep.
is saved for a special use that never happens.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I'm sure we have that, but I'm sure if you went to, say, someone who sews clothes, a seamstress, I'll bet they have boxes full of lace trims and buttons and all kinds of things that are being saved for the special dress or the special blouse or whatever. And yeah, use them. Just use them.
A special fabric.
Yeah. 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 Same thing. And woodworkers, you know they do. Oh, I've got this piece of oak. Oh, it's just perfect.
Uh-huh. Someday. Or some exotic wood from Africa that's a right. beautiful purple
right.
color.
Yeah. Yeah. Someday I'm going to do, yeah, just use it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's hard. You know, it's that interesting. That's what was interesting is that psychological barrier that builds and grows. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, 10 years from now, why haven't I ever used this? What? Yeah. What am I waiting on? Yep.
Right.
Yeah. No, that's the specialness spiral. Yeah, that's going to stick with me for a while. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Every candle I see now. Get a match. Light it. Oh, man. Yeah. No, that's a good one. Yeah. That's from the, what was it, the brain? What?
Hidden Brain.
You find the most interesting podcast. So Hidden Brain and Dressed.
Dressed.
Our two podcasts for the week right here. Hidden Brain and Dressed. That's Dressed. And for those who don't know, just like Fiber Talk, you can just go to your podcast app, just put in Dressed, and it'll come up, and you subscribe, and you'll have it. Yeah. Yeah, easy.
Yeah, the last couple of ones were from a trip that they made to Paris, and they talked to some really interesting people, a couple of whom are haute couture embroiderers, so they do tambour work,
mm-hmm.
And I don't know what else. You know, they didn't really go into that so much on the podcast. You know, it's kind of a just mention in passing while they were talking about other things.
Yeah.
But some really interesting topics that came up. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. From time to time, they do have, like I say, it's mostly about designers, fashion designers.
Yeah, yeah.
But they do have, they've had other things in the past that were embroidery related. And it's just interesting to learn. It's history, you know?
Yep, yep.
So just another aspect of history.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Yeah, you could get me to move a small mountain to see a skilled tambour embroidery person working on, you know, a high-end dress. I bet that's fascinating to see.
Yeah, I would love to see that too.
Yeah, because you know, from the people we've talked to, they do it because it's so fast. All right, I want to see somebody, you know.
Right.
Yeah, that would be something to see. Yeah, and there's your tools again. I'm sure they all have their favorite hook, and been using it for years and guard it with their lives and yeah, the whole bit.
And their frames, because yep. that, you know, whatever they're working on is, you know, tulle or some kind of sheer fabric usually is kind of flimsy and needs to be supported
yep.
firmly. So yep. they're probably using something similar to slate frames,
mm-hmm.
I would guess.
I would think, yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, it's so fun to see master workers who are so skilled at using their tools and to watch them work on a project. And, you know, it's like even Kathy putting a slate frame together. For me, it was a good afternoon just to get as far as I got before I long ago. And yeah, you know, she just picks that thing up. But she's done it a bunch of times, and sure. It just goes together. And all right, let's go. Let's stitch. We're ready to go.
Yeah, it's no different than putting together a set of stretcher bars for her.
Right. Right. Yep.
She's so used to it.
Yeah. Oh, it's so tight. I can't tell you. I can't tell you how nice that is. Oh man, you just sit there and just stitch away, and there's no flex, there's no nothing. The tension, you can make the tension just right, and yep.
Yeah, I've been resisting those, but I have several pieces of gold work, several gold work projects that I'll get around to eventually. And so maybe I need to think about that.
Yeah. Well, you can see why they use them and why they've used them for centuries, because,
right.
A simple device that more than does the job. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the things we learn. All right. We're going to wrap it up here. I think, Yvette Stanton on Sunday, Stitch Hour next Wednesday at 8:00 on the YouTube channel, 8:00 Eastern. And that's going to be it. Thanks for listening.
Bye.